This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Our third and final Archie Creek Look Back interview. Glide Revitalization Executive Director Jenna Beam, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So, what is your first remembrance of the day the Archie Creek fire began? Where were you when you heard about that first initial overnight fire?
I was home. My first remembrance is going outside around 11:30, 12 o'clock that night because I could smell wildfire smoke and looking online to see if I could find anything and then waking up about 2:30 in the morning to find the whole house was filled with smoke. Initially thought there was something in the house and then I instantly realized that no, there's a fire. We could see the glow on the hills. So then it was getting kids awake and throwing stuff in a car and getting out of the house and evacuating.
And at that point, you didn't really know exactly a lot about how big the fire was or anything, right? I mean, and do you have an idea, and you obviously would probably know now, how close was it to your property at that point?
Well, so initially, it was a report that maybe the high school was on fire. A close friend had called to wake me up, and I was already awake, and they told us, no, it's a wildfire, and it's headed your direction. So I live on River Shore Drive, and as I was driving out, there were embers blowing across the road. So I would say maybe 500 yards from where I live is where the fire was at that point, that leg of it. And as we know, it kind of split, and there ended up being two fires, but it was right there. I could see it. In fact, I waited too long to leave.
What was the closest? Did it get any closer?
It got a little bit closer. A neighbor across the airstrip from us had a woodshed that ignited because of embers. And then I found out years later, about a year and a half later, that the roof of the house actually had big burn holes through all the shingles because so many embers got on the roof of the house.
Of your house?
Of my house, yeah.
Wow. That's a little close.
I would like it to never get that close again. But I was lucky, too.
And you've lived in Glide most of your life, right?
Yeah, off and on. I mean, I went to elementary, junior high, high school. We bounced around a little bit. My family was a ranching family. And then I left and went to Arizona after high school for a short time, came back and lived in Green, Oregon for about 7 years, and then have been in Glide since then.
So, obviously, if you were, that close, definitely felt like you could be in danger.
Yeah, actually had just bought the house about 2 days before that. And my mom came and got the kids, got them out first. And I'm also, as you know, I'm also a first responder. So I'm a paramedic also, and I'm used to dealing with tense situations and emergencies. And I will tell you, being on the other side of it was not fun. I was actually just standing in the living room looking around, and my friend actually had to come in and be like, hey, you need to grab photos, this and that, because all of a sudden, nothing in that house mattered. I knew the kids were safe, and there wasn't anything I couldn't replace other than that.
But you just moved in.
Yeah. Well, luckily, it was all in boxes still.
Oh, my gosh. That's even more kind of jolting. What was the rest of the day like for you?
Left, went to a friend's house, and I can remember distinctly sitting at their kitchen table and just kind of all of us being in shock, because by then I was getting reports from the ambulance company and stuff that I still worked for and how big it is, also, knowing people on the fire, and eventually heading back to the house, getting the, you can go back to your house, and hearing about all the houses that had been lost and feeling very guilty that I was so relieved and safe, and looking around and imagining what other people were going through. About 6 hours later, my best friend, I was calling her to tell her and her family, hey, it's now going your direction. You guys need to evacuate and get out. And so they ended up staying with us for, it was between 7 and 10 days in the house at that point.
And did you have to, were you able to stay put there? I mean, I have heard of people who ended up moving two or three times as the fire kept moving.
Yeah, I was able to stay put, and they were also, which is nice. In fact, we kind of became a halfway house we joked about for different friends and family. The ambulance, a couple of the guys were staying there overnight as a place to sleep. Firefighters that I knew on the fire were dropping in and getting showers or food. My kids' friends that lived in the area area that there wasn't enough room for the whole family to evacuate, stayed at the house. It became quite interesting for a while.
And you weren't part of Glide Revitalization at that point, right?
I wasn't. I did volunteer a little bit for them at that time, but it was very, very minimal. And it wasn't until after this event that I ended up becoming involved with the board and then obviously moving to this role down the road.
But your background being a first responder, seeing all these situations, it's got to be so much different when it involves you.
It is. And like I said, I am generally decent in emergencies, but it was paralyzing. And then the other part of it, too, is I love Glide. When I left and moved to Arizona, it was all I could think about coming back to. Being in Green was miserable for me. I just wanted to be back in Glide. I love the community. I love the people. I have so many good core memories there. And to me, it is home. So watching home, whether it's the forest or other people that I've known and went to school with their kids, have those kind of losses and knowing, you know, what they're going through, but also what it's going to take to recover. It was rough, and it continues to be rough.
Now, in the initial couple of days, you probably heard a lot of stories about all the people that were pitching in to help.
Yeah, it was phenomenal. You know, one of the things that makes Glide so amazing is that community mindset that when things go bad, everyone jumps in to help. It was a little bit of that feel that was, you know, present 40, 50 years ago, and that was when the majority of the wildfire fighting was actually done by the loggers and stuff. So it was ranchers and loggers and just everybody that had any piece of equipment or knowledge of firefighting that jumped in to help. And then on top of that, it was the local churches and restaurants that all pitched in to help. I know food was donated from different stores in Glide to, you know, 138 and different, and the North Umpqua Bible Fellowship, Glide Helping Hands. There's so many organizations that immediately jumped in and were like, what can we do to help?
After the first week, things settled down isn't really the right term, but at that point, did things kind of shift a bit?
A little bit. As you know, the smoke was so thick, and so that inversion, you know, not getting into too much about it, but that inversion is actually what really helped keep that fire from getting even worse than it already was, because it kind of put a lid on the fire activity and gave them time to get around it. It limited our air resources, but living in that environment with that kind of eerie orange glow that we've come to know, and being stuck in the house was tough, especially with that many people in the house. As it shifted and we literally started to look at the ashes of what was left, we just felt shell-shocked. Everyone did. It was hearing about, hey, did you hear this person lost everything? Did you know this person lost everything? And it just felt like the blows kept coming day after day.
And sometimes in situations that are more of a limited scope, there's probably a lot of people who've had a friend lose everything or a family member lose everything along the way. For you, it was probably dozens?
Yeah, I knew a big percentage of the people that lost their homes, at least by name or family name. And on top of that, you know, wildfire is not new to Glide. We have fires upriver every year. This wasn't something new. It was that naive mindset that we had all had that, well, it's never going to burn this close to us. We're never going to have this big a loss. And, you know, even now driving up Rock Creek and stuff, it's still so raw. That landscape is still so barren because of this loss.
At the initial start of this, you probably, I mean, you weren't thinking about, I mean, you're probably just thinking about getting through the next hour, but did you ever think about, you know, what's going to happen next? How long is it going to take to deal with all this?
Not really. I mean, I knew it was going to be a long process, but, you know, we were so insulated from a disaster of this magnitude. We hear about hurricanes and floods and all these things, and you're just kind of an assumption that there's going to be a large amount of resources and funding, and there's not a lot of coverage of what that recovery process looks like. I was so naive to how long and painful that process is for people.
All right, we're going to take a break. More with Jenna Beam when we come back to interview a podcast after one at 541radio.com, 1245 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248. Lars Larson at 1. We return to the Back to School series on Inside Douglas County tomorrow. Superintendent Erica Bear of the South Umpqua School District will be in studio wrapping up our series looking back 5 years to the Archie Creek fire, the impact it had on the area. I mean, it was really kind of day by day for months, right?
Yeah, it was. There was a lot of shifting winds and topography and stuff. So we were constantly paying attention to the latest evacuation orders, where the fire is moving, what the containment looks like, and predicted weather, because that was a big part of it. We knew that if those winds picked back up, this fire could very well jump the containment lines that they had.
Now, go ahead a bit. Did you ever think about, leaving for a couple weeks?
No. No. I think it would have been harder, the not knowing. And so I think it's some of that is a human instinct thing, is when you're asked to leave your home and abandon it, there's more insecurity. It's like you think if you're there, you can prevent something bad from happening.
I'm still struck by the fact that you'd moved in 2 days before this. I mean, that's just crazy, because you've got a lot of emotions with having a new house and everything that goes with that and all the logistics that you're thinking about where to put things and, oh, there's a fire and you have to move. How long was it before you could go back?
For me, it was only hours. So probably about 5 or 6 hours. And I went back a little bit ahead of the actual public release of, hey, you guys can come back. And part of that's because, you know, I knew firefighters and stuff on it, and they had called me and said, hey, you know, this is going to happen soon. If you want to head back this way, you can. So
now, looking up the road a bit, talk about, you mentioned the community support that ramped up. Talk about what Glide Revitalization did, kind of kicking into higher gear there.
Yeah, so they immediately set up a center at the junior high, the old junior high gym, and started collecting donations. But on top of that, they started collecting information. So getting people's names, phone number, where their home was located, and what was gone. And at first, people didn't know. But one of the big things they found is a lot of people lost birth certificates and driver's license and debit card. And so then how do you put them in housing from there? That was the initial thing. And the organization did such a good job at that, that that was when FEMA came in later. They saw everything that had been done, and they started deciding that the organization could handle the casework.
And, you know, that puts up sort of a flag for people to think about in their own lives if they've never been impacted. Having all that information in the cloud, having it in a safe as well, having it a couple different places so that if something happens like that and you do lose things, you aren't going to spend, oh gosh, who knows how much time trying to reconstruct everything.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it for a second, I don't know how many people are like me, but I like to play this game with my car where I don't get gas until, you know, there's like 7 miles to empty. If I'm trying to leave my house and I didn't have time and I realized my purse was in that house, you can't get fuel for your vehicle. You can't go to the bank and get money out. You can't rent a motel room. You can't get a replacement ID or debit card because you don't have an ID to show the bank. Those are the kind of issues that people faced when they realized we don't have any of this documentation we need. So photos of it, backup copies, all of those things in a disaster situation are critical.
Now, from the mental health side, what have you seen from people?
Initial devastation, like when I say shell-shocked, that's really the only way to describe it. People still in shock. Even a couple years ago, going up to people's property and standing there with them, it was just this complete look of hopelessness and devastation still. And one of the frustrations with casework and this entire process is a lot of the state and federal programs require applying to them and working through processes again and again and again, only to be told either you don't qualify or the funding's not ready yet or we need more information. And each time you do, you're asking someone to relive what was the worst moment of their life. So as an organization, one of the things we try to do is collect as much of that information up front as we can so that each time we're not inflicting this trauma on them again.
Now, did all of this... Was that one of the things that kind of caused you to ultimately shift into being now the executive director of Glide Revitalization?
Some of it, yeah. So, you know, I had joined the board prior to our previous executive director leaving and got involved that way, and then came on as on a part-time basis. And then we had, you know, an interim executive director for a little while. And then Kendall Melvin, that's still with us, her and I kind of split the director role. And then as we worked through it, her and I both realized we were trying to struggle to handle pieces of the job. And the stuff that I really enjoyed was executive director, and the stuff she really enjoyed was the community facing. And so we divided the role, and I stepped in permanently as executive director. And a lot of it was new for me initially. I've learned so much over the last couple of years. And as you know, we are the long-term recovery group for the entire county. So using the things that we learned over the last few years from Archie Creek, we immediately stepped in with the flood event.
What do you see about rebuilding homes? You know, I mean, a lot of folks opted to move, but it's, I understand it's still it's kind of a low percentage.
It is. So Kendall and I were actually talking about this today, and we estimated between 25% and 50% of the homes that were up there, either people elected not to rebuild, or they moved into Roseburg, or it was a second home and they just abandoned the property. Out of that, you know, initial 220 some cases that we had, we still have 30 cases that have not rebuilt. So you figure 109, 111, depending on which numbers have been reported, homes that were lost. That's still a pretty good percentage that didn't get rebuilt, and we don't know if they will.
Wow. So for people that are, you know, have been following this for the last 5 years, obviously there's a lot to learn, as we've talked about, for the potential of future disasters, but also getting involved in helping others now. Are there ways people can help Glide Revitalization?
There is. You know, we always need volunteers. Obviously, just like with any nonprofit, funding is always a big thing. We work a lot with state agencies as well as local, the commissioners, everyone else, all the different volunteer organizations and nonprofits in Douglas County. And a lot of it comes down to continuing to educate people on what it means to be resilient and prepared, and continuing to build those relationships in the community. If there is no organization there when a disaster happens, that recovery process gets stretched out even further. So right now, Harney County is still struggling to get funding out the door for the flood event, whereas our organization has put almost $1 million out the door since June towards helping people recover from the flood event.
Wow. And that one as well, one that for the people impacted, was a really big deal.
It was, and it was a completely different set of circumstances, because, you know, Archie Creek did get funding federally to help recover from the disaster. And I won't go into all the technical details of what that entails, but that individual assistance portion of funding for the disaster, for the flood event, did not come from a federal level. So there is not anywhere near the funding that was available for Archie Creek.
As you look, you know, ahead 5 years, what do you hope to see in the Glide area?
I want to see it maintain and grow. I don't want to change or see the Glide community really change significantly, because its small nature and community feel is what really makes it special. But we need to make sure that we're supporting it economically, and we're not losing anything else that we have. It's very dependent on, you know, kind of tourist traffic and the restaurants and some of the industry that's there. And we need to make sure that those are supported, so that the school stays functioning, so that people continue to have jobs, and our community as a whole just can thrive.
What about events that Glide Revitalization has coming up?
Coming up quickly, that's a really good question, because I don't know at the moment. I think we will be participating in the light show, the one that Ruby is putting on, so we're doing a little bit of a Christmas parade, and we're going to help with that, but probably just a funding source. So our next real big event will probably be a spring 5K to support the Scholarship Foundation.
And you just had an event over the weekend, right?
We did. So we had a community resiliency day. It was 5 years from the date of the fire, obviously, and it's a really hard dynamic, because we don't want to celebrate the anniversary of a tragedy, but we also wanted to do something to acknowledge how resilient the community is. So we did a community Resiliency Day, free food, fun activities for the kids, and some music, and just kept it very low key and a chance for people to get together.
And if people want to find out more about Glide Revitalization, some of the things going on and other events as they come up, how do they do that?
You can go to our website at gliderev.com or check out our Facebook page, Instagram, or reach out to us through email.
All right. Jenna Beam, Executive Director of Glide Revitalization. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
1258 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEM, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEM.